is the New York State AFERD podcast entitled A through Z Health and PE. We are your co-hosts, Drs. C and C, the true Pan-American connection. I am Clancy Seymour, and my tag team partner is the one and only Dr. Victor Ramsey.
Details highlighting our episodes, guests, contact information, publications, and other useful resources will always be included in the podcast show notes. For more information about New York State AFERD, please visit newyorkstateaferd.org or Facebook and social media handles at New York State AFERD. Let's embrace the journey, and now, on to our show.
Greetings, listeners. I'm Dr. Clancy Seymour with my co-host, Dr. Victor Ramsey. Doc, how are you today?
I am doing well. Very happy to be here with you. You might have heard about the weather setback, environmental disaster that we had here in New York City. I opened my window, or rather looked through my window, and I saw everything red. I thought I was in Mars for a minute there, but we had to stay indoors and protect ourselves down here. But nonetheless, we are good to go now, and the air quality index is pretty normal. Or as they would say, adequate. So we're doing well now. Thank you.
Sure, for sure. Yeah, we had
happy
a
to be here.
Issue last week with the weather. I think it's kind of around the continent, and we'll get to that in a second with our special guest as well. But nevertheless, glad everybody's doing okay there, Dr. Ramsey. So welcome to the New York State AFERD A through Z Health and PE podcast for our Canadian contingents and our guest today, A through Z Health and PE podcast. This is the first of four episodes where we have invited special guests and students from summer courses that I teach here at Canisius College, soon to be Canisius University. Students in these classes are graduate teacher candidates on the verge of student teaching and or newly inducted teachers in health and physical education. Today, we have asked special guests and students ahead of time to review articles regarding physical literacy so we can discuss how this construct specifically connects to physical education and local school communities as a whole. Therefore, Dr. Ramsey and I are both very excited to introduce one of the foremost experts on this topic, Dr. David Chorney. Dr. Chorney is a full professor in the Faculty of Education, Department of Secondary Education at the University of Alberta. Dr. Chorney has been working in post-secondary education for the past 20 years. Prior to becoming a professor, he worked as a high school teacher for 7 years, teaching exclusively physical and health education. David's active research programs focus on physical education, teacher education, PEET, curriculum theorizing in physical education, physical literacy as it relates to teacher education, as well as technology integration within the teaching of physical and health education. David's teaching is dynamic and engaging, and he devotes much time to ensuring that his classes are relevant, meaningful, inspiring, and challenging. He is well respected as an outstanding informed teacher educator at the provincial and national level, and in 2014 was awarded the Rutherford Award of Excellence in Undergraduate Teaching, the University of Alberta's most prestigious teaching award. Very impressive indeed. I can speak to the fact that I've run into David over the years at various international conferences, and that's how we became close. And I've seen firsthand the meaningful magnitude of his sessions. So we're really grateful to have you. Dr. Chorney, would you like to say a few words? Welcome to our listeners and to our guest panel.
First of all, thank you for that intro, Dr. Seymour. The years melt by. They go by real fast and melt away. It's hard to believe, you know, looking at the screen and all these motivated young soon-to-be professionals. I commend you all for wanting to be an educator, wanting to be a teacher of physical education, first of all. When you get to the age of the hosts and myself, it gives you perspective. When you look back and you think about what impact you may have had on students, it can be quite gratifying. And so, you know, meeting Dr. Seymour, probably a decade ago or so at conferences, and to be able to say that, you know, we're both Canadians, but we're both passionate educators. We have similar interests in teacher education and the aspects of phys ed, physical literacy, and that whole gamut under that umbrella It's just very, rewarding for people doing the same work that I do elsewhere. Dr. Ramsey, in meeting him about a year ago as well now, just via online, I just feel his energy and his passion. When I get an email from Vic or we have been on a call together, I can't help but stop smiling. And I smile pretty easily anyway. Vic has that kind of a personality where you just kind of, in my opinion, you want to be around him and not let him go if he's close by. So, those are my, I guess, intro words for now, Clancy. Let's get this thing going. Let's talk and let's share and, work and learn together here.
100%, Dr. Shorty. Well done.
That is awesome. Yes, indeed. Great stuff. So in addition to Dr. Shorty, we're hoping that Dr. Seema's graduate students would take part in this discussion and certainly keep Dr. Shorty on his toes, because I know that soon to be Canisius University, students, you have a lot to share and we look forward to hearing from you. So let's get the show going.
Awesome.
So, So Dr. Shorty, please tell us, what is physical literacy? And hopefully let's get some students to ask some questions as well. Let's get started. What is physical literacy?
Yeah. It's a term, in my opinion, that has a similar meaning from different groups, peoples, organizations, depending where you are situated, maybe in the world. Originally, it comes from Margaret Whitehead from Britain. There are authors from Australia, other parts of Europe and Canada who defined it their own way. And I've got some notes. And so I want to go between reading my notes and reading how I've interpreted it to be. And so, without being too wordy, it's that development of fundamental movement skills and sports skills that permit a child, youth, person to move with poise, I'll say economy, confidence in a wide array of physically challenging situations. And for me, one of the key aspects of this is that as a former physical educator, current educator in post-secondary, where I have an opportunity to make my students think about the kind of programs they want to plan for, implement, and then assess, physical literacy really does require the pedagogical practices where you, and I'm looking at the screen of our teachers to be, have your students engage in learning through the psychomotor realm on the ground, obviously, but also in aquatic environments, on ice, where possible, snow, and in the air. Those unique environments, when you put students in learning situations, it really does cause them to have to think, act, in ways that aren't perhaps normal to their everyday living. And so without incorporating those various environments and a wide swath of fundamental movement skills, you really have to question, what is your program based on? And so I just really think, as teachers of phys ed, creating a plan where you have every student's unique interest at heart and in mind, and when you're planning a quality PE program, you think about the various environments that you have at your disposal and consciously planning to take students into those environments to learn from you, with you, and at the same time, remember that every one of your students, regardless of their kindergarten through to grade 12, are their own unique body. And through a physical literacy approach, you make your students aware that you care for them so much individually, and you want them to get better, to gain more confidence, and again, with poise, economy, such that when they graduate from your program, if you happen to teach grade 12, 10, 11, 12, you have set them up for potentially a lifetime of engagement in activities, from golf, tennis, potentially team sports still for a while after grade 12, although most students don't participate in team sports much beyond grade 12. But you give them that capacity to not be scared of the snow, water, ice, and doing things for themselves and or with others, because most people will not engage in new physical activities after grade 12 if they don't have that confidence or the knowledge to do so. So it is incumbent upon us as quality physical educators to think about that. And I think physical literacy is a nice principal way of thinking and planning that could be accomplished.
Well said, Dr. Shorty. I man after my heart when you talk about multiple environments, physical literacy being able to and each child's journey to physical literacy may look different, right? And may look different at different parts of our life. And yeah, up to grade 12, maybe a couple of years afterwards, it could involve team sports, but the literature does not lie. We pursue different journeys to physical literacy as we get older. So that's important to understand. And then some people excel on the gym floor. Some people excel on the grass. Some people excel in the water swimming. And in my case, and others north of the border, sometimes we are born with skates on our feet and we excel on the frozen water. So that's important to understand, that we have to nurture each child's journey to physical literacy in their own ways. That's really important.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, as youth develop, and I look at the screen here, and I'm guessing, correct me if I'm wrong, Shad, Logan, Tom, Savannah, Ashley, and the rest, Alyssa, that you've played a sport or two in your time. Likely, when I look at all of you, you've played more than one sport and physical activity growing up, and I hope you would have. There are some students in this city I live in, at Edmonton, Alberta, in this province, and across this country of Canada, not unlike the USA, I'm guessing, where some kids from birth through their elementary, middle school, and secondary years are only allowed to participate in something because mom and dad want them to be an elite athlete. Perhaps finances are a factor that don't allow more than just one or two inexpensive activities. And that's too bad in this kind of spectrum I'm sharing with you. Because as you can appreciate, the youthful time that a child has when they feel free, liberated, fear seems to be minimized amongst young children until some age, maybe it's the teenage years, where they start, you know, being more conscious, I guess, and worrying. And that's another story, but is it parental involvement? Is it coaches? But when you got those, that attractive learner who's attentive to you and what you're saying about the beauty of being able to move freely in so many ways, swinging a bat, shooting a puck, hitting a tennis racket, putting a golf ball, rolling, jumping, balancing. We want students to grab onto these fundamental movement skills, all of them, and just keep getting better in all of them as they get older. And again, it's incumbent upon us as future teachers of physical education to set this, you know, set this framework or set this foundation for them as they go forward. And so I this is a message I live in my own life with my own four children. It's something I try and tell parents who I'm friends with about, what are you guys doing with your kids, or what have you put them in? Gymnastics and swimming and hopefully some dance, not just team sport, not just individual sports.
Yes.
So I try to make those inroads where I can. And I think some people hear me and other people choose not to because they know best how to raise their child, I guess.
I love it. Well said, Dr. Cherney. Now, Griffin has a wonderful question that I think is important to perhaps explore. Griffin, do you want to introduce yourself and share it for Dr. Cherney?
Hello, my name's Griffin. I usually go by Griff. I'm coming here from the heart of downtown Buffalo. So my question was, what was the problem with the old term physically educated, and why did it get replaced with physically literate? I kind of read upon it in the articles, but I'd like for one of you to go into more depth about it. Thank you.
Yeah, Griffin. Greetings to you from where you are to where I am today, Griffin. Thank you. Wonderful question. And in all honesty, it is a question I've asked my own graduate students upwards of 6-8 years ago, and I still ask my own undergrad students to think about that question. Griffin, I'll answer it this way. I don't think there's a problem with the term physical educated at all. Because I see the terms as not being synonymous. I see them as being uniquely different, in my opinion. I think physically educated, if you think about the body of a person, the body of a student, and potentially a student may be in, he or she uses a wheelchair. He or she uses crutches all the time. He or she may not have four limbs. He or she may not have the cognitive capacity to learn and engage in the cognitive knowledge that is required, the depth to maybe progress in thinking about movements. So in my opinion, being physically educated is knowing a lot about what should be done, what could be done, how things are done, but perhaps the body can't do it. You can be physically educated, in my opinion, but you may not necessarily ever be physically literate. And because one might be physically literate, and even that's a question I would offer as a potential debate, when does one achieve true and pure physical literacy? Or is it always just a goal that we're trying to get to, but knowing we can never really fully achieve 100% pure physical literacy? So being physically educated, I get one thing. Being wholly physically literate is another thing. And again, is there a definitive, did I just give you the definitive answer? I don't know. Because, and it's debated still, I think, amongst a lot of scholars and people who care for this area. And I would even throw it back to all of you as students. Do you see a distinguishing definition, or do you see them as synonymous terms? And again, if we think about the non, you know, the body that may not work the way it is supposed to work, can you ever achieve physical literacy if your body can't run, jump, throw, and perform in ice, water, snow? Does that make sense? Any comments about what I'm trying to have you think about?
I think you're spot on, Dr. Cherney. Absolutely. And
you know, you think about, I want you all just to take a second maybe now and think about a professional athlete of your choice. And I don't care what sport it is, male, female, trans, you name it. A person, a body as a professional athlete. And you know, and most everybody would agree that that person has it going on when it comes to golf, tennis, lacrosse, soccer, hockey. Yeah, no doubt. But if that person can't even remotely participate in some other activities, or they look awkward doing so, they're probably not physically literate as by the pure definition. Are they a pro? Are they an athlete? Probably, but even that term athlete is what I think we can have debate about. And if all of you were to write down the term athlete, it means, in my opinion, this. We may have differing opinions on who an athlete is, because in my teaching of undergrad students, like all of you are, I push everyone to really think about all of their students as athletes. But, and I have had some disagreements from students in the past on that topic. So I digress. But again, does anybody have a comment or thought on some of these things?
Well, Dr. Cherney, you make an excellent point. First and foremost, physical literacy is a spectrum, right? We never get to the end, with the end being that completely physically literate person, because we can always become better, right? So that's important to understand. And then Griff's question, I think, really speaks to probably some of the articles. Like Dr. Ramsey and I were trying to make sure that we provided articles that were for and against physical literacy and explain some of the misconceptions, which we're going to talk about in a second. But understanding that it's more than just semantics, right? Physical literacy is a social construct. Those are the skills that we want children to be able to acquire to be healthy citizenry, just like we want children to be numerically literate or alpha literate. We want them to be physically literate. So physical education provides the vehicle as one major contributing partner to that. But physical literacy is the societal goal. And it's not just on physical education to be able to achieve that.
Yep. And the word that resonate with me is the word competence, which is in the definition of physical literacy. And Griff, your question is well noted to get some clarity on that. And I appreciate Dr. Shorney's answer to that as well. So I hope that answered your question. I'd like to get to that other question. I saw another amazing question in there.
Yeah, we have a couple from our students. A
couple of questions. Yeah, thank you so much. And the question comes from Brett. Do you think physical literacy is a pedagogical model itself? I'd rather Brett introduce himself and ask that question. I apologize, Brett. Go ahead, Brett.
Hi, Mr. Ramsey. How are you? Great. I'll reiterate the question. Do you think physical literacy is a pedagogical model itself?
A pedagogical model. Brett, thanks for thinking outside the box here and pushing me and others to think about, you know, a question like this. I'll answer it this way, in my opinion. Physical literacy, it's not about just having students engage in physical activities in these different environments and teaching them and hoping that they gain an appreciation and confidence in your throwing, your jumping, your striking, your locomoting, rotating. It's so much more than that. Because when you factor in what the assessment practices should then be, planning for physical literacy, teaching for physical literacy, assessing for physical literacy, this is all part and parcel a quality physical educator if he or she believes in that, and I'll use your term, pedagogical model. One of the problems is that people like the idea of what physical literacy might mean, and they will do the maybe the superficial implementation of a lot of activities in some different environments, but it kind of just stops right there. And so I would lean to the answer being yes. I do think physical literacy could be considered a pedagogical model itself, but one that you as an educator must fully buy into. And because then that'll manifest itself and be operationalized in your day-to-day teaching, your weekly, monthly, semester plans, and it becomes part and parcel of who you are as an educator, as a PE educator. I work with teachers in schools who've taught a little bit of time and a lot of time, and they like the term physical literacy. They buy into what it means, and they do understand it, yet they don't put it into practice, pedagogically speaking, as fully as they probably should. They're kind of doing a hodgepodge, potpourri, dim sum version of it in their teaching. And I'm not saying it doesn't work. I'm just saying it's not a pedagogical practice that's pure then, because there are some teachers who do use physical literacy as the essence of their program, and they're all in from planning, teaching, and then obviously assessing.
Well done.
Thank you for that. I appreciate it.
No, good question. I like where your thinking's at.
Is that something that you would see be done in like professional development, like with the other faculty to try to promote the physical literacy and physical education?
Yeah. I think you're reading ahead of our notes here. You're going to maybe steal our thunder of our script and what my notes are. But you know what? There needs to be this tie-in, Brett, where others believe in the same thing. And in this case, physical literacy. When it comes to different faculties or different programs who are all part and parcel of a future phys ed teacher, like a lot of you want to be, it really does require buy-in, because you've probably taken activity classes in your undergraduate program, am I correct? You've taken various activity classes, folks, yes, no? And in those activity classes, probably you were educated by somebody who knew that one activity or sport real well, and they expected you then to learn that sport real well. But do those instructors of various sports, do they ever talk with each other? And do they realize who you are as their student and quasi-client, in that you will be teaching a heterogeneous group of kids of all races, size, colors, economic status, and you need to make these connections around movement and sports where students see value in the intricate connections that are there, if that makes sense. And so it does require buy-in from different deans or faculties, instructors of all these courses. And then at the state level, in your case, or the provincial level where in Canada where we're at, you need consultants and other people involved in PDing the teachers, even after they're educated and get their degree, to still keep thinking about this. Long-winded answer. I'm sorry, Brett. The answer is yes. Many people need to come together for this to be truly powerful, and all moving in the same direction versus little silos of philosophies, beliefs, and pedagogical models that teachers will pick and choose what they want to do. It's not the best for students.
Sounds good. Thank you for your time. I appreciate you answering that to the fullest. Thank you. Thank you for your time, Mr. Ramsey, as well.
Yeah, my pleasure. Awesome. I just want to, I believe I did skip Vinny. Vinny, my apologies. Go ahead, Vinny. Your question. Go ahead, my friend.
No problem. Hi, I'm Vinny. I'll be student teaching in the fall. I'm a graduate student with Kenesha. So my question I had was how much different or similar are like the national standards in Canada compared to the national standards here in the US?
Yeah, thank you, Vinny. We don't use the term standards in Canada. Here in our country, every province has its own unique set of outcomes, if you will. And so education in Canada is representative of each province, of what their values are. In the phys ed world, we'll just stay right there. And so there are unique variances between all of our 10 provinces and territories. However, if you did a bit of a analysis, and there is some work that's been published out there talking about Canadian physical education system and how each province how each province's curriculum is has been drafted, you will notice a lot of similarities between the provinces and territories. But there is no uniform standard that we must try to achieve. But it's because we're a little smaller than the US, a tenth of your size, we do as Canadians in the post-secondary realm and to our PHE Canada national organization have many opportunities to come together and talk about what each province does. Again, smaller, more intimate, more able to talk. And nobody wants to be kind of left behind, and everyone wants to do the best they can. And there's a lot of collegiality and sharing. So I have always been trying to learn, you know, from Dr. Seymour and Victor and others in the states that I admire and respect about what are these standards all about in the USA. And I've come to realize there's, you know, you've got your national standards and there's also state standards. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, Vinny, there are similarities between Canadians and the US, but I'll just say that there's probably, we get along better in the sandbox together in this country. And there's a lot more similarities from province to province about what we're expecting our students to learn and acquire upon graduation from say phys ed 30, grade 12 phys ed. And there's this whole scaffolding, which probably isn't anything new for me to say to all of you. There's a scaffolding of expectations of outcomes from the kindergarten, grade one, two, elementary level to the middle school to the secondary level, and a lot more onus on the student to take responsibility for his or her learning in the phys ed realm as they get older. And there is a lot of writing in a lot, at least four or five provinces whose curriculum has been rejuvenated, revised, are implementing the principles of physical literacy within their provincial curricula as well. And so not everyone's on board yet, but no one is strongly opposed to it. It's just that some provinces haven't gotten to the refining and renewing of their provincial phys ed curricula. I see that as being a question that Dr. Seymour can maybe ask one day to his students. How do Canadian standards or curricula differ from the USA state standards, and pros and cons or similarities, dissimilarities?
Well, you're 100% right. Canada doesn't quite have a national set of standards where the US has a national set of standards and then individual state standards as well, while the provinces in Canada have their outcomes, but that's kind of about it when it comes to that. Now, Phi Canada and some of those organizations do speak to global principles about physical education, but that's mainly the differences. I feel like back last year when I was attending your grad class talking about the standards and all that as well. So that was great, Dr. Turner. That's awesome. So,
well, and I think for all of us, I mean, all of us on the screen, the more we can learn about each other's country, each other's states and provinces, and we take that knowledge with us, if we ever happen to travel to Europe, Australia, continental Africa, or wherever, we'll see our field through, again, a different lens, and not think, I'm certainly humble in some ways. And one of those ways I like to be humble is to see who teaches phys ed, how in other places around this world. And it's still an area that I need to learn much more about, because the day that I think that I have it all going on and I'm right, and we as a country are the standard, I think that's going to be a sad day, because this is a big planet with a lot of people, mostly outside North America, if we're being honest, right? We know that. And with a lot of brilliant people who are doing the job we want to do elsewhere around this globe of ours. And so, as you know, it's incumbent upon us to know what we're doing in our own backyard. Do we agree? Do we disagree? Why or why not? What do our cousins and our neighbors do to the north and south of us? And then who else is doing teacher ed in phys ed, debating about physical literacy? Who is physically educated? And what are quality PE programs elsewhere outside of, say, North America? And, you know, there's conferences that people talk about these topics on, and it's really important for all of us to kind of think in that global context and get away from our own city, province, state. And that's why, you know, Dr. Seymour and Dr. Ramsey, I mean, we go to places to learn from others, and whoever wants to share with us, or whoever wants to share with me, I'm all ears, because the less I talk, the more I hear and learn from other people. That's my opinion.
Well said, attorney. We have a bevy of students that grad students that have questions for you. So yeah. I think we've really captured the intro to physical literacy and how it connects to PE potentially quite well. So we can move on to our next question, our ensuing question from Dr. Ramsey. Go ahead, Dr. Ramsey.
Yes, most certainly. And I do believe that this question will answer some of the answer to this question will answer most of the inquiries that you have here. What are the misconceptions regarding physical literacy and what suggestions or advice would you offer to practitioners that are not well versed? Obviously, people, you know, who may hear the term and not be familiar with it, may be confusing or somewhat. So what advice would you offer these folks that are confused about this definition?
Yeah.
Misconception, sorry.
No problem at all. I think one of the things I like to do is ask people who are in the field of education and have a, I shouldn't say have a passion for phys ed, because sometimes people teach phys ed because they're assigned it. And they may not want to teach it, but they have to do it. I always like to kind of throw a question back to people who are in a room with me who are teaching phys ed as majors, as minors, or they've just been assigned the principal, and ask them to think about, what is your program about? What would you say your program is based upon? What's your footing, your foundation, your grounding, and why? And once people start thinking about the practice that they are implementing with their students, we can then have a conversation around, okay, so how do you understand the term physical literacy? What does it mean to you? And a lot of people will know tidbits of it and whatnot. And so one of the misconceptions I think that has arisen with the people who I've spoken with and just kind of debates around these terms is that you just can't plug and play physical literacy into your program. It's not just about putting kids, learners, sorry, in different environments to learn from you. It is more than that. It is more than just the incorporating more fundamental movement skills into your program. Because you, by thinking about what you do and by seeing your actual semester or year plan and really looking at it and critiquing yourself, you may be surprised by the number of things that you're offering your students. They're simply in the games category, or only requiring the use of balls. And what I often will push some of the people that I work with to say is, if you couldn't play any games in your phys ed program, and if you could not use a ball in your phys ed program, what do you have left? And for some people, it's like, no problem. Yeah, I actually teach about 20%, 15%, 20% of my program in the dance realm. Others will say, yeah, I got 10, 15% of my whole semester is on gymnastics. I don't need balls, David, for that. Fitness components. And other people will struggle with that, Vic and Clancy. They'll struggle with this understanding that their program is kind of one-dimensional and physical literacy is quite, has a lot of tangents to it. Tangents. And so getting people to think that what their program is about, having them be honest and reflecting about it, then asking to think about what physical literacy can offer them to then offer their students, we may get to some middle point where people are questioning their practice to maybe be able to do a better job than they've been doing. And so again, I'll go back to my original point. It's kind of, you just can't plug and play it, because a good quality physical educator needs to think about their assessment practices and how do students, you know, earn marks and grades in school, in physical education as well. And if you're not thinking that part of it, you're not thinking about that whole child, you're not thinking about the whole sphere of what quality phys ed is all about. We do have to assess students. They need to know if they're, you know, they need to know what they're learning. And we need to know how good of a teacher we are by what they're showing us, telling us, how they act in class socially with each other. Those are big deals for us, for me in a phys ed class. A kid can be very athletic, can be very smart, but it's just not a nice human being or not a nice citizen. That's an error then maybe in my program where I didn't work enough on those aspects in my teaching, my pedagogical practices with that student or that class or that grade level.
Well said, Dr. Charney. Sometimes sport perpetuates bad behavior instead of recognizing how we can intentionally change or alter towards a sporting behavior that we want to instill with youth. So that's important to understand. Tom, I believe, has a question that kind of stays in this the same lane when it comes to misconceptions. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Tom Winslow here in, from Rochester, New York. You know, kind of touched on it already, but do you think physical literacy as a term is confusing to the outside community or learner? And, you know, trying to instill this new concept, do you think it can be better said or, you know, more defined to be understood better by somebody who's not in the industry and using the term consistently?
Yeah. Yeah. You know what, Tom, thanks for the question. I do believe it could be a little misleading or unknown to the average person. I think in our PE community, and I think it's my gut feeling that in many PEAT programs across North America and elsewhere, the term physical literacy is weaving itself into the pedagogical practices and the literature and the teaching of undergrad future teachers. The public at large probably wouldn't know what the term is at all. But Tom, I'll say it this way as well. I don't believe a lot of the public truly understands what a quality physical education program is and what PE means. Because, you know, you can ask 100 people at the mall, what does PE mean? And they'll say, you mean gym? PE, oh, that's sports, right? What games? I think a lot of people go that line. And you and I, and we all know, everyone on the screen knows that, you know, we've got more pride, we've got more education and knowledge in our field to not let those kind of comments go by the way, go unresponded to. I'm not a gym teacher. None of you are gym teachers. We have a degree or two. We're getting a graduate degree. And we work with students in a professional school setting as a professional educator. And we understand what students need for their best health and wellness going forward to become healthy citizens, to make good choices after grade 12. So, I think physical literacy is a term that's not used and known by a lot of people outside of our sphere, but not unlike the term physically educated. But I do think, you know, it's a slow process. Maybe it's the same, maybe it's different, but AFERD used to be the acronym of your national organization. It went to SHAPE. AFERD in Canada got reduced to PHE Canada because nobody knew what Canadian Association of Health, Phys Ed, Recreation, Dance was, and are all those areas equal? And if they're not all equal, right, so you kind of minimize things to try and not make it more sexy, but make it more known, make it more identifiable, and maybe more interesting to the average person. So, Tom, I'll say it's your job, my job, Alyssa's job, Ashley, Clancy, Victor, Shad, all of us, Savannah, it's all of our job to keep educating our current and future students, maybe the parents and guardians of those students, through electronic communication, through real paper notes home, through in-school newsletters, outside your school office, down the hallways, and just keep educating people as we go along all the time, and not let it rest and assume that you know what a quality phys ed program is, what PE means, and or what physical literacy means, because you kind of have to start from somewhere. And it wasn't the term I used a lot, Tom, or ever, when I was a high school phys ed teacher for 7 years, but I was still utilizing the principles of physical literacy at age 21 to 28, and I really didn't know it at the time. And so let's not think that physical literacy is a term, although it's being given credit by Dr. Whitehead in the 80s as a term that was not known before. The principles therein, you have to admit, they were there well before Whitehead coined the definition, and PhD Canada and other advocacy groups gave their own definition of it. Quality PE was always there. And, you know, but the definitions seem to change, and foci tend to sometimes change over the years as well for different reasons.
I agree, Dr. Cherney. Well said. And it's people like you, experts like you around the world that have really championed physical literacy, because there are misconceptions, and myself included. At first, when I heard the term, I thought, and I wrote about it, I thought we were pandering to the accountability era when it came to trying to make sure that we were a testable subject like other disciplines. And so it took me being open-minded, like you said, to learn through the lens of others about this approach about this construct, and from the context as well, like you said, that and you and others have done such a wonderful job about explaining that this term has been around historically for almost 100 years. So it's not, it's been around for a long time. So I think this really speaks to this question that Dr. Ramsey posed for you about misconceptions. And then you brought up what we can do in K through 12 as physical educators. And I think some of the questions we have from our students, our graduate students, excuse me, are really speaking to that next. I think we have Alyssa who's going to ask you a question related to that. Go ahead.
Hi, Dr. Torney. My name is Alyssa. I am from Wilson, which is just about as close as you can get to Canada without swimming. My question is, do you believe that as we start to adopt and change the term from physically educated to physically literate, that it will help bridge the gap between regular education students and students that may be at a disadvantage, such as minorities or have disabilities, et cetera? And can all students really achieve physical literacy?
Well, Alyssa, thanks for asking a difficult question. There's a few things there that you're asking. And, you know, the first part of that, as I read it, I'm not so sure that in the circles that I maybe like to hang in, that the term is changing or the term has changed. I would like to say and believe, at least in my own head, that they are still two different terms with their own definitions. If you've read and if you believe and if you hear that people are using physical literacy now in lieu of or synonymously with physically educated, I'm just not sure that's the best or that's accurate. Will help bridge the gap between regular education students and students that may be at a disadvantage. Can you flesh that out for me a little bit more as to what you're asking there?
Sure. Maybe just students that are either special education or belong in maybe a class that is a self-contained classroom versus just a regular education, your day-to-day ninth grade physical education class.
Yeah, you know, all students are so different. Every single student is his or her their own unique being. And, you know, one of my philosophies of teaching undergrad students, like all of you, who will then teach students in schools, like I did, like you want to do, is remembering that our job is much more complex when teaching students, learners in, a grade 9 classroom, grade 10 classroom, because some students cannot function cerebrally as they would hope that they can, just like the physical body can't and won't perform for some kids as it should. So where I'm going with this is that in my professing to my undergrad students, I want all my students to think about in their planning, the cognitive, the affective, and the psychomotor domains in their planning. And when constructing units of instruction, for example, and trying to see the linkages between units of instruction over a semester or a year, are you giving every single student a chance in your class, under your tutelage, the opportunity to maybe, we'll say, earn a high mark and to acquire the skills, not just psychomotor, to the best of their ability? Because your program, Alyssa, your program may cut some kids out of reaching their full potential by the way you set up your program. And if it's only physical skills we're talking about, there's a percentage of kids who will never get there to that next level, his or her own next level. They may be morbidly obese. They may be very timid type people who don't want to move in front of others. They're scared about sweating, acne, what they're wearing. They skip, like, there's so many dynamics in play in the phys ed class. We really have to think about all learners and our programs offered to them, attending to what do they know and how do I know what they know and how are they as citizens? What am I doing to create good partnerships in my class? Kids who want to help each other, truly care for each other, because we have that ability, Alyssa, in our phys ed classes to do that, right? And so physical literacy can help bridge that when we speak about every student needing to think about themselves and every teacher thinking about every student individually to get to their own personal next level. And it's not just about the fundamental movement skills, because some kids will never get there through no fault of their own.
Well said, Dr. Cherney, and it speaks to the inclusiveness of physical education and how it supports the physical literacy construct.
Yeah, and your last question there, Alyssa, thank you. Can all students achieve physical literacy? Well, that's a question that I don't want to say it's a yes or no question. It's a hope, and I think Dr. Seymour mentioned that earlier. My philosophy is that it's kind of a cradle to grave type thinking. And you, as I look at the group here in front of me, and all of us, myself included, how physically literate are we? Am I? Are you? Is my student? And when you really think about who is that person that is an amazing swimmer, skater, curling, softball player, gymnast, run, tumble, speed, poise, like who is that one person? Is there anybody? Or is that like the panacea that we want to try to attain with all of our students and have them, you know, reach for the stars, even though they may never grab that star? And that's okay. Because when a student in your class can graduate from grade 12 and you have helped any and all students feel confident in picking up a tennis racket, a baseball bat, a hockey stick, that they feel like they can go for a run, they want to garden and golf into their 80s and 90s, that they're not scared to take part in activities around the water, and that the snow doesn't fear them, and that they're upside down in some way, shape, or form, that they think it's cool and exciting and exhilarating, then you've done your job. You've done what you should be doing with these kids. Because all you have with them is about 12, 13 years if you teach K to 12, and most all of you probably will only teach kids maybe 7 to 12, maybe 7 to 9, or 10, 9, 10, 11, 12. Am I right? So that's a very short amount of time, but it's still an opportunity during those years to be impactful in their lives through a quality program that does utilize some of the principles of physical literacy. Alyssa, thanks for a loaded question, couple questions there, but I like your thinking. Thank you so much for asking.
Thanks for answering them. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Dr. Cherney. Thanks, Alyssa. How about Montaka? You're up, my friend.
How you guys doing? My name is Montaka Shad from Buffalo, New York, a graduate student at Canisius College. My question is, how does physical literacy provide clarity for physical education? It was one of the questions was asked in the articles that we were reading.
How does physical literacy provide clarity? Ooh. That's assuming it does. And I'm not sure if it does, Shad, straight out. Think of yourself. I mean, I think of myself in a school setting. If I go back a few years, back to a public school setting, and I had a teacher who was instilling the principle of physical literacy, clarity for physical education. I don't know if the clarity is the best word, but what I think can happen is that through again, a quality phys ed program, which utilizes the or some or most of the principles of physical literacy, I think we can make our students appreciate making healthy choices for themselves, making choices to engage in physical activities that are intrinsically motivating for them. I think a well-developed program, Shad, that offers a lot of variety, but there's purpose behind this variety. And in your teaching, you make connections from sport to sport, skill to skill, and engaging the learners in your class to use this, because of the scenarios you put them in, the questions you ask of them, they will, in time, I believe, gain a healthy appreciation to want to live a healthy, active lifestyle. And again, their fear of being sweaty, their fear of failure, their fear of not being the first or the best will be subsided through good pedagogical practices by all of you. And is that not what we want? Students to leave our public school setting with that confidence and a competence and just the desire to want to move their bodies. I was on a bike ride yesterday with two of my boys. They wanted to hang around. It was a hot day here in Edmonton. They wanted to be on their devices and just kind of chill out, which isn't a terrible thing. But I made them come out and let's go get a bike. My wife actually said to me, you know, David, take the boys out, you know, do something with them. We went for a bike ride and it was a great 45-minute bike ride. Just being outside is good for the body. And when you hang out with each other, friends and friends or parents and kids, which the role modeling is really important, there's so many benefits to that. My kids then have no problem and fear grabbing their bikes and going with their own friends. It is still cool when you're 16 or 13 to ride bikes with your friends. And sometimes in today's generation of kids, it's getting to be even more uncool. And there's other options that are better. And that is on the phone, on Fortnite, hanging out inside on the couch. And no need to go down that path. So Shad, I think there's opportunities there to make meaningful connections to your program through the principles of physical literacy. And a guy like you, you turn on all those kids, you get into their space, you find out what they like, you provide a plethora of activities, you make those connections, you hope, and not hope only, but you hope, and then you see the intrinsic motivation that comes through in all these kids, and they'll thank you years after graduation. And you'll never know the power you have when you provide a program that's just, you know, so broad and deep, but engaging and meaningful for kids, and not just a month of football, a month of tennis, a month of track, and a month of dodgeball and low organized games. There's my Fizzit program. A plus, give me a break. That's garbage.
I love it. Well said, Dr. Cherney. And it really does speak to Montaka's question, because physical literacy, like you said, is not a plug and play. It's multi-layered. It's not just about the foundation. All we have to provide the foundation. We've been providing the foundation for quite a long time. There's so many layers to it. It's providing the safe and equitable learning environment to try new things and experience successes and failure in a safe environment, so that you instill that inspiration for children to want to be physically active and try new things. So there's a lot to that, for sure.
Yeah. Good questions, everybody. Thank you for being so deep here.
Well, Logan's got one for you too. That's a pretty good one. So Logan, you're up.
Uh-oh.
Hi, my name is Logan. I'm a graduate student at Canisius also. And my question is, we kind of touched on this, I guess, a little bit earlier, is that do you think mastery in a sport may like prevent the potential for physical literacy or no?
Do I think? So I can't go wrong here with my answer, right?
Yeah, great question.
Well, you know what, Logan? When does one really master a sport? I guess I think of it that way. When are you all that? You had a LeBron, right? Basketball, he's Gretzky in his day, Sidney Crosby, Connor McDavid. Yeah, they're masters probably of their sport. However, what have they given up along the way to become a master in that sport? Now, you can say they got the fame, the recognition, the wealth, the notoriety, but that is a very exclusive group. Those who are professionals or masters in a particular sport. I mean, you name the sport. There are people who are experts, pros at the top of every sport out there. There are. But what is our purpose as teachers of the generic homogeneous group of learners in our schools? So back to your question, do you think that mastering a sport may inhibit the potential for physical literacy? Probably. Because it takes, Victor, have you heard that 10,000 hour rule?
Yes, kind of need to
put, and probably a lot of you have thought about that. Or
yes.
You know, do you believe that?
Repetition. And
if it's believed to be true, Logan, how many days, weeks, months must a youth and then teen and adult put in for 10,000 hours? And like in terms of time. And so, how do you, and if we agree that physical literacy is potentially very hard to truly achieve in a lifetime, but it's a standard we want to go for, it's kind of hard to be potentially a master in a sport and yet, you know, have, I guess, success, confidence, prowess, deep skill in a multitude of activities and sports. What do you think, Logan?
Yeah. So what I was kind of thinking of is also like, I was thinking of like Michael Jordan, because he like played basketball and then went on to play baseball. And there's like, I guess some of those like special examples that probably relate to that, but the average person, probably isn't.
Yeah, no, you're a smart woman. And yeah, he did do a little bit of baseball. He never became a pro at it, quasi, and, you know, pretty good golfer, but a lot of that happened outside the basketball time frame. And, you know, when you have money, you can get trainers, you can get special treatment and, you know, all that, all the rest of it. I think because the time it takes to become a master in something, you're going to give up being even average at a lot of other things. And so as a future, you know, as a parent, and if all of you are blessed to have children one day, how do you want your own children to be in terms of the physical education concepts and realm? and their own physical literacy. Do you want your own children to be able to move with rhythm when any kind of song comes on, a country song, a pop hit, and they can dance in 3-4 time, they can do a cha-cha, they can do a waltz? What about when someone throws them a ball? Can they hit it the first time? Can you put them in the water, push them in, and they're not going to drown? They're going to tread water, then they start floating. Oh, they went upside down, poke their toe through the water in the top. Put a pair of skis on them, downhill skis, cross-country skis, and they can get through the trail and have fun doing it. Those are the things that my wife and I wanted our children to be able to have as gifts. The ability to dance, run, play team sports, do gymnastics, and at some point, Logan and others, the children, we decided what really thrills us and where we wanted to invest our time and where the parents may wanted to invest their time and resources. And so to be a master in something, hey, I applaud those people who can get to be the top in their game. But are you even average in many, many, many other things? Or maybe the better question, Logan, I would say, answer my own question, are you willing and able to engage in other things and give it a go and not be fearful of failure? Because some people, if they can't be number one in everything, they just won't do it. And I see kids already in the grade 6, 7, 8, 9 levels, not willing to take chances, Logan, Savannah, Shad. They don't even want to because they're scared of not being the best. And sometimes the parents feel that's a reflection on them, which, okay, give me a break. Your children's success in sports got nothing to do potentially with you as a parent and how you are as a parent. So I hope, Logan, my response gives you something to think about.
Yes, it does. Thank you very much for your time.
This is awesome. And just before, I believe Ashley's up next, two things that stood out to me in your response there, Dr. Chorney, was one of them is something that we share with our teachers here in New York City, which is about reflecting on your practice and ask yourself, would you want to be in your own class? Or in this case, you ask, would you want your child and or a child that it's in your family to be part of your class? That's something that resonated with me. So it answered the question to all students being inclusive in these physical education settings. So I appreciate you sharing that piece right there. So again, I want to be mindful that Ashley's up, I believe, next to ask a question there, Dr. Seymour.
Yes,
Ashley. Go ahead, Ashley.
Followed by Savannah. So we've got
we got
lots of questions for Dr. Chorney, but Ashley's up next. And just a real quick point about what you said, Dr. Chorney, the idea that, again, physical literacy is that journey, right? And that journey changes, and instilling that in children. And Logan's question is really intricate because it speaks to not physical literacy, not physical education, but the tensions within physical education, because we have physical education professionals that believe physical education should be a skill focus, should lead to competency in team sport. And now that starts to muddy the water. So Logan's question is really dynamic because, like you said, Dr. Chorney, we want to instill success and failure in movement.
Yes.
Learning in movement, learning through movement, learning about movement, like Dr. Arnold said a long time ago, right? That's what it's all about. It's not about trying to become an elite athlete. And that's where the tension starts to arise. There are some children that do not have access to safe movement experiences. And physical education is the only opportunity for that. And physical education provides that opportunity to become physically literate, that journey. Yep.
And I love how you brought it to the family, hence myself included, learning about the game of pickleball. And Dr. Clancy Seymour here is my instructor. And that's a lifetime physical activity and or sport that I hope to continue. And I'm getting better. I'm getting competent at doing it. So 100%. Thank you for sharing that. Now, go ahead, Ashley. You're up.
Students might have something to say about that. But go ahead, Ashley. Go ahead.
We'll go to the video. Go ahead, Ashley.
All right, so I'm Ashley, and thank you for having us here today. I'm also a grad student at Canisius here in Buffalo. And we did kind of touch on this as I was typing this, but how would you explain physical literacy and get your students to understand that concept without taking too much time out of the class? So obviously we have a goal of keeping the students moving during class, but you also want to take the time to explain physical literacy? And at what age would you start explaining that? What age do you think they would be able to comprehend it to the point where it would encourage their effort given in class?
Yeah, that's a good question. And, you know, a lot of times as teachers, we know a lot of things that the students don't know. And we know a lot of things that the students don't care about and they really shouldn't concern themselves with. We're the professional and we have the big picture and a journey in mind. We want our students to follow us on, or some might say, go along with them in this journey of learning. Because as teachers, we don't know it all, but we do know a lot. I'll say that. You know, I would almost ask the question back to you, is it necessary? Do you think it would be that important to explain the term physical literacy to students in your PE program? And if you do, and I don't think there's a bad thing with that, you might just wanna, you know, use those terms in your teaching to students that comes across as you truly wanting them to learn with you and that you care for them and that you see them hopefully developing in your class over that semester or year or years. If you have that, you know, I'll say opportunity and gift to work with children over a 2-3-4 year time frame, that all that you're going to do with them and for them in their plan, in your planning, is to help them again gain confidence and skills and knowledge and understanding, and so that whatever you're teaching them, you're hoping they will find motivation within that. And one of the ways that that can happen, Ashley, is by engaging with your students in conversation and engaging with them in your teaching. I'm not saying give the students the right to choose their classes that you're teaching them or their activities, for example, but hearing them, at least in some capacity, and that your program will represent some bit of their voice. And I would ask you to think about this and just spin it around to be in their position. You've all been in schools, you've all been in university now. How often do your instructors, professors, coaches, whomever, really want to engage with you as their learner, as their student, as their athletes? And the times that that happens, do you not feel kind of valued and validated? And I believe the answer is yes. And so I don't think there's any age that's too young to offer up kids in K-1, 2, 3 to tell them why you're doing what you're doing with them or for them. And as kids get older and their competence, like, you know, their language skills too, up to about grade 4, students have, what was the number? The number of words that the students have in their vocabulary doubles every year, like after grade 1, 2. So by the time students are in grade 4, they're pretty literate in terms of verbal literacy and writing literacy. So if you want to go down the path of what physical literacy is, they've probably heard about math literacy from their teachers or their parents. You might just want to make this a term that's similar to the other literacies that they're being expected to learn in public education today, and maybe just keep it at that. But all the while, you know what you're doing, what path you want to take them on, and that's to be competent, confident, willing to take chances in your class. And you as the teacher are giving them all these opportunities with bats and balls and rackets and string and ropes and indoors, outdoors. And that's maybe the better angle, because simply explaining physical literacy to young kids, it just, no matter how good of an explainer you are, I know I probably couldn't do it very well. It's probably over their head. They're like, who cares, David? Like, boring. Can we play now? Versus another approach where it's more kind of age related and you kind of camouflage the true nuances of physical literacy with better teacher student talk. If that makes sense.
Indeed. So I think this segues nicely to Savannah's question. Go ahead, Savannah.
Hi, my name is Savannah. Thank you for giving up some of your time to talk to us and educate us a little bit more. My question is kind of a loaded 3-part question. So it's basically just, how would you incorporate physical literacy into a physical education program that is already set in their ways? Do you think that the current physical education teachers who have been there for a while would be open to this idea? If so, what do you think the best way to approach a situation like this is?
Slow and steady. Because when you talk about who's infringing upon these teachers, for example, like, would it be a consultant in the school board? Would it be somebody who's an administrator? So I guess first and foremost, I always would like to respect the experience of a veteran teacher, because there's no denying a teacher that 10, 15, 20 years, they've learned things. And, you know, what constitutes a good phys ed teacher? Again, a question we can debate. And, you know, a quality phys ed program, I think there's criteria around that. But if I was somebody, Savannah, who could be a fly on the wall and who had a bit of maybe leverage or pull, I would just sit back, first of all, and let time pass by to see what this teacher is doing, because they may be already incorporating some principles of physical literacy, but they just may not be that obvious. There may be some things in their program where a teacher may be catering to a certain group of learners in that class. Maybe it's they're siding with just the boys. They're siding with just the athletes in general. Their program is more towards the lower skill and cognitive level of the students in a class, but forgetting about the other kids who need instruction and support as well. Whatever it may be, Savannah, whatever scenario it may be, a person really has to buy into and believe that what they're being asked to do and think about might have value for them. For me, or any of us, to tell a teacher who's doing what he or she is doing in a class that that's wrong and that you need to do this, you're going to get walls put up, I think, pretty darn quick. And so it would be little things to have them reflect on their practice, little things to have them question, honestly, if you're the best teacher that you think you can be and are, what are you doing well? Where do you think you need to improve? And what would you be willing to do differently that you haven't tried before? I think those are some ways to maybe ease into it. And so for all of you who are on the cusp of being a professional educator and the ability to soon get into schools and work with kids, maybe have your own program and you're it, or you're working in tandem with somebody or in a staff department, there will be different options and opportunities for you. I taught in the grade 7 to 12 high school all by myself, teaching physical education for 7 years. I was the boss of my program for all students 7 to 12. I made mistakes and I turned some kids off to physical education, physical activity, health and wellness pursuits. I know I did, but I was also, I was young, naive, but I was also reflective very early in my career. And I rectified some of those wrongs that I made in my early career. And I started listening to my students. I started questioning my practice at the end of the day. And if I had kids sitting out of class, why were they sitting out? If I had students who weren't doing well in some of the cognitive content, did they not care? Was I not a good teacher? And so all of those emotions and thoughts came through my head, but I was honest with myself. So Savannah, back to your question, I think it's really things take time. People as educators need to feel valued and complimented when they're doing things that are good, admirable, and quality work. There's nothing wrong, though, with having suggestions given to people, but people who ask for that help first and early is also really, really good if it comes to that. I mean, I would hate to go into a school in anywhere in New York and say, wow, your program's horrible. What are you doing? Like, you can't do that. Do this instead. You'll be much better because I know the way. And the literature says this. What's the reaction going to be? They're going to give me one of these five fingers, you know which one it is, and tell me to get out of Dodge fast, because who the heck are you? Versus, wow, you got so much equipment here. You got such a great program. Your kids seem very enthusiastic in your class. What's your program all about? How do you assess them? Where do you want these students to be next year in phys ed, or at the end of this year, if it's early in the school year? And sometimes you'll get a lot of revelations by teachers, and sometimes you'll get minimal revelations. And then, so I don't know, Savannah, it's a great question, not the easiest to answer, because a boss coming down hard on someone says, you must do this, use physical literacy, change your program, don't do so much stuff with balls, and don't do so much stuff just in your gym all year long. They may think about it, but they're going to be a little bit of resentment because I'm a professional, right? So that person will say, I think I know what I'm doing. I've been around here for a long time. You're also, you know, young in your careers. You have so much opportunity ahead of you to influence others you're going to work with. And if you're not working with others formally in a phys ed setting, look at that gift you might have one day of running your own PE program and how rich that could be for you. So I'll leave it at that.
Impressive, Dr. Cherney. Great question, Savannah. You know, we're running out of time, and a couple of things I've learned, Dr. Ramsey, what do you think? First off, we should bring back Dr. Cherney for
absolutely
part deux.
Yes,
of the physical literacy discussion.
Sure,
so much to speak on regarding the topic, and one thing I'll just give kudos again to Dr. Cherney about regarding physical literacy, that physical literacy has empowered you to become a reflective practitioner.
Absolutely.
Today, given, you know, some of your honest reflections that you've shared with us today, I think that certainly speaks to the power of physical literacy and how it relates and connects to physical education and quality PE.
Yeah, and what I hear it, and I have to add this part, is that the questions were geared to kind of prepare you to be able to share the information with your future colleagues that you are going to be teaching alongside with, who may be confused about a definition and or introduction to physical literacy into your program, and certainly with the language. Absolutely.
Sure. Dr.
Cherney, this was a lot.
You want to add something, Dr. Cherney?
I do. Correct me if I'm wrong, but all of you on the screen who are the pre-service teachers, are you all in high school training or middle school or elementary or K-12?
It ranges, yes, K-12. They'll eventually complete an elementary and a secondary experience in both.
Great. So you're in that fortunate position, I would say, in that you don't know where you're going to probably teach. And maybe it sounds weird coming from me, but I teach predominantly students who want a grade 7-12 environment. Okay. The problem with that is that a lot of my students, and I did too, in all honesty, 30 years ago, I wanted to be a high school teacher and I became one. But the teachers who teach elementary physical education, health or outdoor education, right? They're the ones who, as a secondary teacher, we depend on them to do a really good job with those kids. So when they come to grade 7 or they come to high school, grade 9 or 10, those students are coming with perhaps some knowledge around what physical literacy means, about what a quality phys ed program is. They'll be coming with a knowledge set. They'll be coming with a psychomotor skill set that is where they need to be for the grade that they are now in, versus what happens in a lot of schools. My students become a high school teacher right now. They're graduating next week, and they get a school in September, anywhere high school, Edmonton or Alberta, for example. And they get students coming in from grade 9. Their assumption is that these kids who are in their grade 10 class should be a certain way, should know certain things, and perform at a certain level. And it doesn't always work out that way. And some of the students that they get in grade 10 are running like they've never ran before. They don't understand how to properly throw, heaven forbid, catch, as some basic examples. You know what I'm saying? And so any of the elementary folk who want to be a teacher, it's, you know, incumbent upon that program that they're in across the world, North America, Canada, USA, that they understand the good principles around physical literacy, around good teaching pedagogy of physical education. And I think, you know, for all of us that are on the screen right now, you can appreciate wanting to have students in the grade that you will be teaching, that those students are at that level in the cognitive and the affective and in the psychomotor realm and domains of learning within phys ed. Because otherwise it's challenging. And to be a grade 10, 11, 12 teacher, when you're dealing with a percentage of kids, I don't know what number it is, who just don't have that skill set or the knowledge, and you got potentially elite athletes in grade 10, 11 class in a few sports, really strong athletes, and some kids who are just not there at all, but they're all in your class. Hey, welcome to teaching and then teaching of physical education in a lot of places in this country.
Well, indeed, Dr. Cherney, and that's it. I think that's the challenge moving forward when it comes to some of the intricate challenges of physical education, K-12. Secondary physical education is the challenge, not only in the U.S., but Canada and around the world. We're seeing the same tendencies when it comes to that.
Sure.
Well said. So, just fantastic. And on behalf of New York State AFERD, we'd like to thank Dr. Cherney and our Canisius College graduate panelists for joining us today to share thoughts and perspectives to our listeners, especially physical educators and future professionals. The information shared today could serve as a catalyst for your ongoing preparation. The session will be posted on the New York State AFID website and on our podcast channel. Stay tuned for new and exciting episodes scheduled throughout the year.
Yes, and please visit us at newyorkstateaford.org, social media handles at New York State AFID, or call us at 315-823-1015 for more information. Please also take note of our many professional development events throughout the year, including our annual state conference at the Turning Stone Casino in Verona, New York, each year in November. It's been great having you today, my friends.
Thank you. Thanks, Dr. Cherney. Thanks, graduate students.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Glad to see you all. Congratulations.